Good afternoon. So we've now got Chris Cormack coming in, along to talk to us about COHA, Integrated Library Services. So Chris has a Bachelor's of Science and a Bachelor of Arts, Maths and Māori Studies. While at Katapo Communications, Chris was the lead developer of COHA, which went live in 2000. He has since played various roles from release manager, quality assurance, and he's currently the translation manager. So COHA has grown from a small library installation to now be on every continent, bar maybe Antarctica. So if you can please welcome Chris.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi kia koutou, kia tai mai, kia whakarongo, ki tēnei kōrero e pāna ki te hōtaka roro hiko COHA. Thanks everyone for turning up to listen to this speech. I normally go on Māori a little bit longer until I can see everyone's face start to panic. But I only have 15 minutes, so I won't do my joke. So COHA, because I've only got 15 minutes, I've decided to just forego the slides as well. I was trying to cut an hour and a half to 15 and it just didn't work. So what is COHA? COHA is an integrated library management system. So it runs a library. It does circulation, does acquisitions, borrower management, has a public access catalogue. Mark already showed you some of the features this morning, which I had to take out of my talk. What else have we got? It's got a lot of enhanced content because it's just a web app, so we can pull in content from Google Book Search, Amazon, Syndetix, you name it, if they've got an open API, we can pull in their data and combine it with the COHA data. So it does everything. If you go to a library or if you've worked in a library or you read books, you're familiar with what a library system does. It manages the whole entirety of the library, budgets everything. So why does it exist? In 99, in Hora Whenua, Levin, Foxton and Shannon, there's a library system there. Our library... they call it a system. It's a bunch of three branches. And they were running some proprietary software, and the company had ceased to support it, and it was going to not work in the year 2000. It was going to issue books to totally wrong years. We tested it, and it just wouldn't have worked. We couldn't get the company to fix it. They didn't exist. It was proprietary software. We couldn't fix it for them. So they went through the RFP process. They got a whole lot of responses, primarily from people who didn't read the RFP at all because all the solutions they proposed wouldn't work. In Levin, back in 99, you had electric fences and phone lines. So you couldn't run compression over the... You could do 33K3 modem. It was about as fast as you could get between the branches. And you had to use the big rural modems, which are noisy, to get through the click, click, click on the line, which screws up your compression. There's no DSL. You could get ISDN if you wanted to sell your children. And even that, most of the solutions were things like you're going to need Windows Terminal Server or Citrix MetaFrame, something like that that you just can't. If you want to issue a book maybe twice an hour, that'd be fine. But if you want to actually do real-time transactions, you know, where a second is long, then that's not going to work. So when I was working for Katapu, we were a little software outfit. There was, I think, six of us at that stage. And someone, I think it was Simon, said something like, it's just a database, how hard can it be? And words we regretted. But no, that's how it started. And the reason it was free software was because the GPL was a way to mitigate the danger to the small library, to the fact that you're going to have a system that's written by six people in Wellington who go away skiing together in this rickety old bus up a really windy road. So you really want someone else other than them to be able to fix it. I used to have a slide of a bus going off a cliff, but I've lost it. So that's the genesis of it. That's how it came about. So in January 5th, 2000, which was the first day back after the holidays, we switched it on, and we haven't switched it off yet. So that we've had one outage, and that was when... an aircon technician pushed the server off the rack onto the floor and then put the drives back in, put it back on the rack and ran away. So, and so about 10 minutes later, everyone was like, man, it's really slow today. And so that's the only actual outage we've had that was a real outage. We've had like a minute down type of thing, but that was like half a day while we got a new server up. From one small library in Horowhenua, it really, for about half, we released it on SourceForge and put up some packages and made a website, and it took maybe a day and a half before the first person emailed us back to say, I've installed it, and now what do I do? It really slow uptake in New Zealand, but really fast uptake in the rest of the world. So we had one of the car manufacturers out of Detroit. I still don't, to this day, don't know who it was because they never actually told me. But it was, I think it was GM, used it to catalogue all the in-house manuals for the engineers. So that was one of the first ones we had. Following them, we had a group in British Columbia, Coastal Mountain School District in Canada. They installed it over 12 schools there. And then it kind of filtered around Europe a little bit. We had a Polish monastery. They were the first people to start doing translation on it. Then it went into first public library in the US was in 2002. And from then it's pretty much spiraled up. I looked this morning just before. There's a website, Library Technology, and it's got a part of it, librarytechnologyguides.org, and it's got a subsection, libwebcats. And in there you can search, it's a voluntary directory listing of all libraries around the world and what software they run. So you can jump in there and you can punch in, you know, say Horizon or Koha or Evergreen, and it'll give you a list of the ones who have chosen to list themselves. There were 932 Koha libraries this morning. And I know of 87 more that are in the wiki that aren't in there, and then there's probably a bunch more who haven't listed themselves. In the last couple of years, the real big growth has been in India. You really don't even hear from them because they have so much competence in IT that you only hear from them for the really hard questions. You don't hear the how to install it kind of ones. But there are some of the libraries in India running it is Delhi Public, which is fairly big, as you'd imagine. Not in terms of books, but in terms of circulation. They, because they don't have a huge amount of stock, what they do is hourly and two-hourly and half-day loan periods. So they turn over stock a lot. So if you want to read the Linux Journal and you're in Delhi in India, you're going to go use the Koha OPAC to reserve that for 3 hours on Monday morning. Go to the library and read it. That's a kind of... It's grown to a bunch of libraries, and now it's kind of at this a weird point now where we have 35 support companies around the world providing Koha support services, and a little bit of growing pains going on in the community at the moment. We've got one fairly hostile vendor which has been taken over by another vendor which may not quite be as hostile. It was quite interesting in the 10 ways to destroy your community talk yesterday. I could tick off 7 of them that have been done already. So hopefully we don't get to all 10. So far we're bouncing back. But there's kind of, it's gotten to the point now that's big enough that the big companies, the proprietary companies, are starting to take note of it and be worried. I don't know if you, late last year there was a paper that came out of Cersei Dynex, which was a white paper. It wasn't supposed to be publicly read. Someone put it up on WikiLeaks, and it was basically a document from a big proprietary library system vendor saying how open source funds terrorism, essentially. That was actually one of the lines in there, and that's kind of the extremes that they're going to, which I take as a positive sign. When they start resorting to, you know, stupidity to combat it, it means that it's the third step of Gandhi's plan. You know, they're fighting you. We just have to win. So, I just got the 4 minutes sign, so I will quickly jump through to what I was going to talk about quickly for the last bit was the things that koha is being used for that you wouldn't necessarily think it's good for, or that you wouldn't have thought of it. Apart from running a library, because it's open source or free software, schools are using it as a teaching tool. So there's a professor at University of Buffalo who uses it for his computer science class, because we get modules written by them. Then there's one I just got an email yesterday from a guy at Long Island University who ran a course, and the main part of the course that the assessment was done on was install Debian, install Koha, and issue 7 books. And all 17 students managed to do it. So that was kind of a neat little email to get yesterday. So that's the kind of thing that people are using it for, apart from actually for running a library. You can use it for a teaching tool. People have done all sorts of weird things. I know a guy got it running on a PlayStation just because he could. A 16-year-old kid did it for his Scout merit badge. He installed Koha for his church library. So there's some neat little stories and stuff like that, which, and for me, that's what makes working on free software worthwhile, is those intangible kind of benefits, those little stories that you can, you know, reminisce about, or you can tell other people about, and it makes the world a better place. The other one is that in library there are a group of fairly educated and fairly wealthy people who have used Koha to start their own open libraries. So getting a bunch of people in the community who have a collection of books, getting those books catalogued together and enabling the community to access to information that they wouldn't otherwise have. And if you want to get involved, we need more librarians who want to do bug wrangling. And bug wrangling doesn't mean you have to fix the bugs, but it means we want people to test bugs for us. So we get bug reports, we fix them, and then often they don't get closed. They sit there in this patched state for like 2 years until someone gets sick of it and just closes them all, and no one actually tests them. So that's something that we need. Otherwise, like I said, uptake in New Zealand, we've got two public libraries and another one coming. Met Service run it, Opus just run it, and a few other ones. But in New Zealand, if you've got any pull in the library, just mention to them that maybe they might want to run some free software. I know it's saved Levin $2.5 million over the last 10 years. We did a council presentation on it. So there's economic benefits as well as it empowers your community. So that's about it. It will take MARC records. So if you can get your access at records into MARC, which is the library standard. MARC, I don't know, Brenda might be able to answer that one. Do you know what format access it is?
Oh, I don't know much about that. My guess is that it's not MARC-based. Does it let people download records from the National Library? It does. In that case, it would.
Yeah,
in that case, it would, so you'd be okay.
Yep. MARC's the international standard.
But I'm going to ask this question.
For
library
systems.
What would you do differently, if anything? Is that a hard one?
Yeah. Now, if you ask me, 2 years ago I would have changed to the AGPL differently if I had to do that again. That would have stopped. We've got essentially a fork unreleased code running as software as a service. Vendors refusing to release upstream. They don't have to. The GPL doesn't compel it. More than 1 year. So AGPL, because you can't force cooperation, but you can make it harder for people to be bad, and maybe doing that would have been good. And a foundation sooner. Somewhere to hold community property. Like in this day and age, you need someone to look after your trademarks and your domain names and that doesn't have a business interest, that has purely a custodial role. That's the other thing I probably would have changed. I don't know. I wouldn't have tried to... Probably wouldn't have done it. No, I would have. If I was 25 again, I'd do it again. Certainly there are a lot of things now that you could do it better. and that's why I'm still working on it, because technology has improved a lot, so there's a lot of good things that we can keep improving with it.
In February?
Bob, do you know? There's a great company in Australia called Calyx. Bob's here from. So Irma is going to be there. Now, unfortunately, Vail is pretty expensive. And the reality of being a free software library system vendor is you don't have a marketing budget, so it's quite hard to.
I discussed with Irma from Calyx the idea of putting together a stand sort of representing open source in general with Kohar's the right. focus, but it was beyond our means, really.
I think maybe next year, if I can at Catalyst, if I can get some more Kohar work, then we might be in a position to do a Catalyst, Calyx, whoever else stand, come over for that. Cool. Two years, okay. We did earlier online in 2005, I think. It was in Sydney then. That was good. But libraries move slow, really slow, and people are locked into long-term support contracts. So basically you've got to take a long-term view that you go to the conference and you make some contacts and maybe 3 years down the track that might pay off, which is hard to budget like that far ahead. I work for Catalyst, and I'm primarily on the Fairfax team, doing the stuff website, but I'm doing more and more Kohar work. So I used to. I was Kohar team leader at Karipur for 4 years, and that was my entire job. And then I worked 1 year for LibLine, and I was research and development there. And so, yeah, no, I have been working in free software since 97, and I'm still eating, so must be doing okay.
Well, if you could put your hands together and say thanks to Chris.